I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Woman's Right to Know Act, a bill in the Pennsylvania legislature, requires a woman to have an ultrasound 24 hours before getting an abortion to establish the gestational age of the fetus. The act also documents whether or not the woman chooses to view the ultrasound image or video and listen to the heartbeat. Supporters say it helps a woman make an informed decision. Critics say it interferes with the doctor-patient relationship. The bill was set for debate this month and has been tabled for the time being. Nonetheless, we asked the lead sponsor, Representative Kathy Rapp, to join us. She's a Republican representing the 65th District in Warren, Pennsylvania. And Representative Rapp, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. And I'm quoting here from a House Bill 1077. A woman considering an abortion has the right to receive complete and accurate information regarding the development and health of her unborn child. I don't think anyone would argue with that. Do you, though, have research to show that women wanting this information are not able to get it, or that information has been withheld from them?
Yes, we actually do, from testimony, from people giving testimony to legislators in other states. I'm looking at one now that's right in front of me where the woman is saying, how many times have we all had regret about decisions, and if only I had known then what I know now. This was a woman who, I believe, testified in Rhode Island and shows much regret and remorse because she was not given the full information regarding her pregnancy.
And how common do you think that is?
I'm not sure how common it is, but I think if there's one case where a woman says, I was not given the information. And quite frankly, it bothers me that the medical profession would want to withhold any information about any test to a patient, because I think no matter what the procedure that you're facing, that you should have all the facts in front of you before you decide to go any type of procedure. And certainly this is a procedure and a decision that a woman makes, regardless of what decision she makes, that will affect her for the rest of her life. And so I believe that it is the best interest of the woman, the patient, to have all the facts before she makes this decision that can impact her the rest of her life.
This bill has language in it calling for the measurement of the gestational sac, and the American Pregnancy Association said a gestational sac is often the first thing that most transvaginal ultrasounds can detect, obviously early on in a pregnancy. Does this bill call for a transvaginal ultrasound?
No, it does not. That is left up to the physician to determine. However, even in Planned Parenthood facilities, they have been using the transvaginal as standard medical practice because it is the procedure that can determine if someone is looking for an early abortion, whether or not that pregnancy is viable. It can determine whether or not the woman has an ectopic pregnancy, but I understand that so can a on-the-stomach ultrasound determine that. And most facilities, even Dr. Gosnell in Philadelphia, was utilizing the ultrasound. But our bill does not specify what type of ultrasound. But indeed, most facilities for early abortion are already doing the ultrasound. And even Planned Parenthood, even their facilities are not only doing them pre-abortion, but post-abortion to make sure that everything is cleaned out from the woman's uterus.
So if this is currently being done, why does Pennsylvania need a law, in a sense, mandating this?
Well, we say that most facilities are currently using the ultrasound. The component that is not currently law is that the woman should have the right to view the screen. And that is the part that is not being done. The woman should have the right to all the information, all of the facts regarding the ultrasound. The doctor should be informing the woman how far along she is in her pregnancy. whether or not there is a heartbeat. And indeed, the ultrasound, again, is the device that can determine whether or not the woman is having has a viable pregnancy, whether or not there's a risk, a life-threatening situation, if she has an ectopic pregnancy. And the ultrasound also shows the development of the child. If the woman chooses whether or not to continue with the pregnancy. There's a lot of details that the ultrasound provides, but the woman should have that information available to her before she makes that decision.
And reading again from the bill, the ultrasound screen, and this is a form that has to be filled out after an ultrasound has taken place. And I'm quoting here from the bill, the ultrasound screen was positioned so the patient would be able to view the screen in its entirety while the test was being performed. And this is what the physician says. I informed her of her right to view the ultrasound screen in its entirety while the test was being performed, which she accepted or refused, and that gets marked whether she accepted or refused to look at this particular ultrasound. Why does the state want to force a woman to make that decision in a difficult time in her life?
Well, we're not forcing the woman to view the ultrasound. She can choose not to view the ultrasound. There are many forms that hospitals and physicians have to fill out and send on to the Department of Health. The health profession is highly regulated in the state of Pennsylvania. Anytime you go for any procedure, there is usually a form that you have to sign, forms that the doctor has to sign and fill out. And this is really not something that even if the woman is going for the ultrasound, I'm sure there are forms that she has to fill out currently. This is just another form that the doctor has to send to the Department of Health because we already do keep track of the number of abortions in the state and the gestational age. And this is a way for the Department of Health to make sure that doctors are actually informing their patients of outcomes and what's on the screen of the ultrasound.
Now, the Pennsylvania Medical Association, the Pennsylvania Division of American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, among others, have been critical of this bill. Let me quote from the president of the Pennsylvania Medical Society. Once in an examination room, a patient should be able to fully exercise her right to openly discuss the diagnosis, prognosis, and possible treatment options with her physician to the exclusion of any outside influence. She goes on to say it would significantly jeopardize that open dialogue with the physician-patient relationship, which is the very foundation upon which modern medicine was built. This, of course, is if this law is enacted. What is your response to the head of the Medical Society of Pennsylvania, representing about 18,000 doctors?
Well, I have to wonder why they do not want women to be fully informed before they make this decision.
I think the argument is that this is already taking place, and it's a different.
If it's already taken place, then why do we have women testifying in states that they were not informed of the ultrasound? They were not informed of the gestational age, of the development of the baby. As I said, you know, the facilities have to report the gestational age to the Department of Health. We want to make sure that they're using the most advanced technology that's available. That's still between the doctor and the patient. But we also want to make sure that the physicians out there, and this is still covered, you know, under HIPAA, privacy issues, but at the same time, yes, we are asking that doctors inform the Department of Health that women are being fully informed. You know, this has been put into law in 23 other states in some form or another. And I'm sure the Medical Society has opposed these laws in these other states. But for the life of me, I cannot understand why physicians would want to be against a bill that simply says the woman has the right to this information, especially in this day when we're asking government to be open. We have right to know laws. People talk about transparency. And that's what we're asking of the medical profession, to make sure that they are giving women all of the information that they need before they make this decision.
Let me just jump in here, only because we only have a couple minutes before we have to say goodbye. And Majority Leader Mike Terzai of Allegheny County here in Pennsylvania has canceled the floor debate, which was scheduled for March 12th, because of, quote, concerns raised by the medical community, among others. And it sounds like some of the co-sponsors of this bill are concerned about some of the criticisms coming from the medical community.
Well, we have this all the time on any bill that has a huge impact or is controversial. This is not new, just to this bill. Bills are pulled back frequently when there are questions from different interest groups in the state. This is nothing new, and so we will take this time to educate our colleagues, have a sit down with the medical society, and try to get a handle on their concerns. But this happens frequently with any bill. Just recently, the impact fee that was passed, it was on the table, off the table, redrafted, amended, before it was finally up for a vote. And actually, the Senate had a bill, the House had a bill, it went to concurrence before the final vote.
And let me just jump in here, only because I'm looking at the clock. But do you hope that if this bill is passed, that a woman choosing an abortion will choose not to have that abortion?
Well, we certainly hope that we will see an increase. There's been 52 million abortions in the United States since 1973. 52 million abortions since 1973. Obviously, yes, we would like to see that number reduced, but we want to make sure that women have all the information. This bill does not take the woman's right to choose away. It still has the medical emergency exemptions in this legislation. The bill simply says ultrasound. It does not require one ultrasound over another that is between the doctor and the patient. But indeed, Planned Parenthood has been doing the transvaginal ultrasounds for a long time. And as I said, before the abortion and after the abortion. But we want to make sure that women make...
Oh, I think we seem to have lost our guest. We're going to take a very short break. And that was State Representative Kathy Rapp from Warren, Pennsylvania, the 65th District in Warren, Pennsylvania. And she is the lead sponsor of the Women's Right to Know Act, a bill that is in the Pennsylvania legislature. It has been tabled for the time being, but nonetheless raises a whole host of questions about abortion and ultrasound. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is committed to delivering comprehensive care in an environment where respect, compassion, and quality come first. To learn how they help make lives better every day, ChesterCountyHospital.org.
Voters from Georgia to Alaska and in plenty of states in between are set to weigh in on the Republican presidential nomination. I'm Melissa Block. 10 contests take place tomorrow, and we'll bring you the latest results and analysis, plus reaction from across the nation. Special coverage of Super Tuesday from NPR News.
Tomorrow night at 8 on WHYY.
St. Patrick's Day comes early this year. Patty Maloney and the Chieftains return to the Kimmel Center for one show only on Friday, March 9th. Celebrating their 50th anniversary, the Chieftains are beloved for bringing traditional Irish music to the world stage. This Philadelphia favorite returns to the Kimmel Center for a rollicking pre-St. Patrick's Day bash. Tickets for the Chieftains are available at 215-893-1999 or KimmelCenter.org. The Kimmel Center supports WHYY.
WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA, providing the power of a great education.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. Battles over birth control and abortion are erupting all over the country, dominating headlines this campaign season. We just said goodbye to Kathy Rapp, the lead sponsor of a House Bill 1077 here in Pennsylvania, introduced to require pre-abortion ultrasounds. We want to talk about why contraception, abortion, and women's health have become such a divisive issue. And joining us are Michelle Goldberg, author and senior contributing writer to the Daily Beast and to Newsweek, author of The Means of Reproduction, Sex, Power, and the Future of the World. And Michelle Goldberg, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Melinda Hennenberger, and she's a political writer for the Washington Post, author of the She the People blog. And Melinda Hennenberger, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
Michelle, let me begin with you, and just even keying off the interview that I just did with Kathy Rapp about this pre-abortion bill, ultrasound bill in Pennsylvania, keying off of Virginia's vote last week. Why do you think these ultrasound bills are making their way around various states and have been approved in some states as well?
Well, you know, it's interesting because these laws have been... Well, actually, before I say anything, I want to correct something that the representative said about the test. She kind of, you asked whether there was evidence that this information was being withheld from women, and she cited the testimony of an anti-abortion activist in Rhode Island. And I think it's important to point out that the woman who testified in Rhode Island and said that this information was withheld from her is an anti-abortion activist, and not this information is kind of routinely provided to women. The only question here is, A, what kind of ultrasound, and whether it will be mandated despite the doctor's recommendations. I mean, sometimes doctors do routinely perform these. I guess the question is whether it's their decision to make or the state's decision to make. But one of the things that's fascinating is that these laws have actually been being passed and have been on the books for quite a while. And it's just what happened in Virginia that suddenly seemed to catch people's attention and kind of galvanize opposition in a way we haven't seen before. I think because it came on the heels of what seemed like so many other attacks on women's reproductive rights and women's health care, and all of a sudden the notion of these kind of men forcing women to have these transvaginal probes against their will, whether or not it was recommended by their doctors, I think crystallized a lot of the intrusiveness that we're seeing across the board.
And to you, Melinda Hennenberger, some describe the transvaginal ultrasound as a form of rape. Does that go too far, or does that meet the definition of rape?
I really don't think it goes too far. I think I personally see this as that, and I think that there's just too big a disconnect for Republicans, and the reason I think this is a losing issue for them politically is that there's such a disconnect between the Republican conservative view of government is too invasive and this will only hurt a little. I mean, this. I think that the pushback you're seeing should have been expected on the right.
Well, and it's interesting, Melinda, looking at this bill proposal in Pennsylvania, the Woman's Right to Know Act, and it's couched as informed consent and the idea that a woman should have all the information so she can make an informed decision. Does that work for you?
Well, it seems a little misleading to me. I mean, I share Representative Rapp's hope that we could reduce the number of abortions, but this just seems punitive. I mean, I don't share her view that forcing a woman to have this procedure against her will could lead anywhere positive. I don't understand how that would work. I don't think it's I don't follow the logic of it. And I think that she's saying should have access to all this information, but in fact, she's being forced to have the information. Even if you say, well, the woman can look away, she doesn't have to look at the results of the ultrasound. But when you're being forced to have a medical procedure you don't want to have, I don't understand how that works.
And Michelle, even going back to this bill, and it talks about positioning the ultrasound, and I think one has to wonder when the government gets involved with how a medical room is designed, it seems to me that opens up a whole can of worms.
Well, yeah, and I also think, you know, I'm glad that this bill had an exemption for victims of rape and incest, but I also think that's very telling, because if this was really just about a right to know and protecting women's health, you wouldn't need to have an exemption for kind of quote-unquote innocent women who are seeking abortions. I think that makes it clear how punitive this is.
And to you, Melinda, and this is a more political question, but it seems, certainly looking at the Republican candidates, that they have taken on these issues of contraception and certainly abortion and women's health to their peril, it seems.
Yes, and I think that was not the plan. I think that is, of course, their view, and as we know, Mitt Romney's views on this have evolved in is what he says, so that he's been pulled so far to the right that he's no longer the same guy who you knew as governor of Massachusetts, it would seem. But I don't think it was in the Republican plan to run on these issues. I think that there have been some events, including Coleman, Race for the Cure, pulling their grants to Planned Parenthood, that put this issue in the news. I think that these candidates, Rick Santorum in particular, has been asked about the issue, and when he says, yes, I don't approve of birth control personally, but I've supported Title X. And then later, and during a debate, he says, well, I don't really support Title X. So I think that, yes, the Republicans have been pulled into, and wisely on the part of Democrats, into talking about this issue more than they wanted to.
Do you think
a few months ago, for us to have thought this, you know, everyone thought the election was going to be jobs, 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 and the extent to which it's now about birth control is completely beneficial to Democrats, because if you're talking about abortion, women are divided on that issue. If you're talking about birth control, it's overwhelmingly support access, complete access to
Michelle,
birth control.
Michelle, let me go back to you and picking up on that. And as we know, abortion has been divisive since Roe v. Wade, and obviously before as well. But it seemed, again, that contraception, an almost settled issue. But here it is, you know, once again in the political forefront.
Right. And, you know, I would almost like to think as a liberal that the Democrats were so clever that they kind of engineered this debate and sucked the Republicans into it. But I actually don't think that that's the case. I mean, Rick Santorum gave an interview, which you can see online, to a sympathetic blogger, where he talked about, apropos of nothing, nobody brought it up, he talked about what I really want to do as president is talk about the dangers of contraception in this country. That was way before George Stephanopoulos asked about this at the debate. That was the reason he asked about this at the debate. So the Republicans kind of keep saying, oh no, the Democrats are forcing us to have this debate that we don't really want to have, but they can't stop themselves, you know, if they can't stop themselves from kind of going back to these culture war issues again and again and again. You know, it's certainly not the Democrats who keep forcing them to come up with this mandatory transvaginal ultrasound legislation. It's not the Democrats that have forced them to have an all-male panel about why health insurance plans should be able to refuse to cover contraception. You know, so again, I think that this isn't just that they've kind of haplessly been sucked into this debate. It's that even though this debate might not be good for them politically, this is who they are.
Mm. But even going back to the Blunt bill that was defeated last week, Melinda Hennenberger, defeated by just 3 votes, that's a pretty close vote in the U.S. Senate.
That's a pretty close vote. But back to Santorum, I would say that, you know, yes, he gave the interview to a blogger saying he wanted to talk about the dangers of birth control. But the other thing he says is that what liberals don't understand is, I want to talk about it, I don't want to legislate it. And that there is some kind of liberal projection that because they want to legislate mandated payment, insurance for birth control, rather, that conservatives would want to do essentially the same thing in forcing them not to have birth control. I do think that this whole debate has gone places the Republicans never wanted to go.
Oh yeah, I agree that the Republicans don't want it to go there, but it's going there in part because they are a victim of their own rhetoric. And while you're right, I don't think that Rick Santorum is going to outlaw birth control at a national level or that we're going to see birth control bans. It is also true that he has said that Griswold versus Connecticut, the Supreme Court decision that establishes the right to contraception, was wrongly decided.
And that's Michelle.
Yes.
Hold on. I just need to quickly reintroduce you. Michelle Goldberg, author, senior contributing writer for The Daily Beast and for Newsweek, joining us by telephone, author of a book called The Means of Reproduction, Sex, Power, and the Future of the World. Melinda Hennenberger is a political writer for The Washington Post, anchor of She the People blog. And we are talking about pre-abortion ultrasounds. We are talking about contraception, women's health, reproductive issues. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Is this a winning issue in 2012? Melinda, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to make the small point that while he said he does oppose Griswold, he also said he opposes it as a lawyer and believes that states should have the right to ban it, but would oppose any such effort to ban it on the state level.
But do you think when someone running for president, though, talks that way, they do risk being misunderstood, Melinda?
Oh, of course. I mean, we see that it's not just a risk, it's a reality. I mean, and Rick Santorum, for good and for ill, will answer a question when he's asked. I think that has always been a strength and a weakness for him.
And Michelle, even going back to this compromise on contraception with the American with ACA, the health care bill, now this deal, in a sense, has worked out between the patient and the insurance company. But that doesn't seem to satisfy some members of either religious organizations or conservatives as well.
And again, I think that the reason that this seems that the religious freedom argument, especially now that they have this compromise, doesn't fly is that these kinds of laws are now in place across the country. I think it's 28 states. Many of them have no exemptions for religious institutions like hospitals and universities and the like. And where there are exemptions, it's of the sort that you see at the federal level, where they basically leave the religious institution out of it and make sure that the coverage is between the woman and her insurance company. And so if this is some kind of a radical attack on religious freedom, we've been living, without knowing it, under tyranny of various sorts for the last 10 years or so. And yet it's only now that they've kind of taken up the cudgels and decided that this is, some kind of imminent secular totalitarianism. And so it's the Supreme Court, which is, I think, quite friendly to religious claims at this point, refused to hear a challenge to New York's contraceptive mandate. So we know that this is constitutional, even by the standards of our very conservative Supreme Court. So basically, this does become an argument all about contraception as opposed to about religious freedom. And the very fact that you see these kind of eruptions coming from people like Rush Limbaugh, who's a very important voice in the Republican Party, turning it around and saying that, this is really just about kind of slutty women wanting to be paid to have sex, I think shows that there really is a current of misogyny and also basic ignorance about the way birth control works underlying this whole debate.
Well, let me go pick up on that, Melinda, and go back to you. And as we know, Rush Limbaugh calling the Georgetown law student Sandra Fluck a slut and a prostitute last week, demanding a video of sexual encounters if, in a sense, we are paying for them being sexual. In a sense, treating birth control like Viagra.
Right.
But nonetheless, he apologized, and he's been losing sponsors for his show. And I guess the question is whether he went too far, whether he'll pay some kind of price for this. And he also used the word feminazis, which he has been using for years. But now it seems like it's back again. What kind of price or what kind of what is he going to pay for this, in a sense, Melinda?
Well, I'm not sure that's clear yet, but I don't think there's any question that he went way too far.
Absolutely.
I mean, this,
it's outrageous.
I don't think that Rush Limbaugh, or at least I would hope that Rush Limbaugh doesn't speak for everyone who has a concern about religious liberty, which I do think is a valid concern and not to be dismissed. But obviously, Rush Limbaugh has taken it to a level that is ugly, and And that, I think, hurts the Republican Party, especially because none of the candidates dared to say he was wrong. To me, the Republican candidates, that is. To me, this was such a no-brainer for a sister soldier moment for those candidates to say, obviously, Rush Limbaugh, you know, what he said cannot be condoned. I did not share such disrespectful talk about women. And yet, none of them did that. You know, Rick Santorum said, well, he's an entertainer. He's not in the same business I am. Mitt Romney said something equally noncommittal. I mean, this really shouldn't have been such a stretch. And yet, when you see that they're so afraid to step out of line from what Rush Limbaugh says, you have to ask who's the leader and who's the follower.
Well, I wonder, Michelle, whether that tells us something about the listeners to Rush. And I think he has something like 24 million listeners and who and what they represent in the Republican Party.
Yeah, and I agree with everything Melinda said, except that I wouldn't say that Mitt Romney's response was equally noncommittal. I actually think it was significantly less noncommittal. I mean, he wouldn't even, all he said was, that wasn't the word I would have chosen, which kind of suggests that he would
another
have.
Another word for slut, you mean?
That he would have insulted Sandra Fluck in some other kind of more genteel terms. But, you know, I think we kind of know that Rush Limbaugh's audience is the most kind of rabid and reactionary part of the conservative base, along with, if you know, along with kind of some disgruntled men who just like to be entertained and have their anger indulged and also have their kind of pornographic fantasies of the kind of women who use contraception indulged. I mean, one of the things I just can't get over, I did not realize that there were so many right-wing men in this country who don't know how the birth control works. Who
that is not Viagra.
The more sex you have, the more pills you take. You know, which just suggests a kind of level of ignorance about women's health care that is really staggering.
Well, and we're about a minute before our break here, but to you, Melinda, as we know, women tend to vote more majorities than men. Are there political then risks for the Republican Party? Since most people in this country have, most women have used birth control?
Yes, as I said, I think this goes beyond risk. I think this is really hurting them. I think that as a visual, the picture of the all-male panel testifying, Nancy Pelosi couldn't have planned that better herself. Mm-hmm. I think that Rush Limbaugh saying these things and the candidates refusing to call him out for them, very harmful among independent women voters.
And that's Melinda Henenberger. She is a political writer for the Washington Post, anchor of She the People blog. Also with us, Michelle Goldberg, an author, senior contributing writer for The Daily Beast and for Newsweek, author of The Means of Reproduction, Sex, Power, and the Future of the World. We are talking about reproduction. We are talking about pre-abortion ultrasounds and contraception as well. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. And we do want to get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you make of the battles over birth control and abortion that are erupting across the country? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Abington Memorial Hospital supports WHYY and offers treatment for prostate cancer using the Calypso system. Miniature beacon transponders no larger than a grain of rice are implanted in the prostate, providing precise information on its location during radiation treatment. This procedure uses GPS technology for the body. Because radiation is delivered with accuracy, surrounding healthy tissue can be spared. 215-481-MALE to learn more. That's 215-481-MALE.
Many extremely creative people, Beethoven, Newton, Wolf, suffered from psychiatric disorders. Does creativity mask the madness, or does madness boost creativity, expanding depth and insight? I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, I'll look at the connection between the creative mind and the disquieted mind in light of the new show of Van Gogh's works in Philadelphia. Today at noon, here on WHYY FM.
The Brandywine River Museum supports WHYY and presents Comic Catharsis, a gift of cartoons by William Steig. The creator of Shrek, Steig achieved fame for his thousands of cartoons, New Yorker magazine covers, and his humorous observations on human relationships. Comic Catharsis at the Brandywine River Museum is on view now through March 11th. Details online at brandywinemuseum.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Debates about contraception and pre-abortion testing have dominated the news in the last few months. The Blunt bill was narrowly defeated last week in the U.S. Senate. Virginia backed off a bill that would have mandated a transvaginal ultrasound for a woman seeking an abortion. A similar bill has been introduced in the Pennsylvania legislature. We're talking about all of this with Michelle Goldberg and Melinda Hennenberger, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me see what Siobhan from Brigantine, New Jersey has to say. Siobhan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Siobhan? We don't seem to have. Let's try Edie from Lansdale. And Edie, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. That would be number 3. Go ahead, Edie. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
I noticed that the representative who's proposing this bill does not have a lot of statistics to back it up. And one of the things that I'd like to express as a breast cancer survivor is that there are a lot of women who are in an unfortunate position of not being able to be pregnant because of underlying medical issues where the pregnancy could quite literally kill them. And it's interesting to me that none of those statistics or any of that evidence is given in that dialogue. And I don't understand. To me, it seems like the whole plan is a whittling away of the right given under Roe v. Wade, couched in a blanket of a right to know, when a woman can get that information from her doctor, and it would be a confidential situation and not one that's mandated by state law.
And that is the argument.
I'd also like to say I don't understand how people can be anti-birth control and also anti-abortion. It seems to me that one would prevent the other. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Edie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Melinda, you want to take that last one?
Yes, I understand how people can be anti-birth control and anti-abortion, perhaps only because I'm Catholic, and I understand the teaching behind, though I don't agree with it personally, behind opposing birth control. But I personally agree with Edie that if we're going to get serious about reducing the number of abortions, we can wish, hope, and pray, but the only real answer is to make contraceptives more available.
Well, and Melinda, we learned from some studies that you are not alone as a Catholic woman that uses birth control.
Oh,
in fact, the majority.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that doesn't, to me, take it off the table as a question of religious liberty. I think there is a valid concern for having the state come in and tell a religion what they can and can't, must and must not. But I think that's true that for many, many years, many Catholic women have, and men, have ignored that teaching. In fact, during Vatican II and right after, there was so much discussion within the church about the validity of that teaching and whether there weren't cases in which we should use mm-hmm. a different standard. The Pope John Pope Paul VI, rather's own commission decided that the church should be more open on the question of birth control. And, of course, he decided not to go with the recommendation of his own panel. And many people all around the world disagreed.
Well, Michelle, let me, in picking up on what Edie first said, and even looking at states across the country where there have been these laws to limit abortion, it seems that anti-abortion legislators have been making pretty significant inroads on this issue and having some successes.
Yeah, I mean, unprecedented inroads. You know, I don't think that there has ever been a legislative session with more anti-abortion laws, which I think is really telling about the kind of true nature and goals of the Tea Party, which obviously didn't campaign in 2010 on a massive rollback of reproductive rights extending to contraception. You know, and it's also pretty clear that, of course, these laws are meant to interfere with a woman's ability to access an abortion. You know, obviously, anti-abortion activists believe that not only doctors are qualified to conduct ultrasounds because they're constantly raising money to put ultrasound machines in anti-abortion crisis pregnancy centers. Nevertheless, in some states, including Texas, the laws mandate that the ultrasound to be done before an abortion has to be done by a doctor, not just any doctor, but the same doctor performing the abortion, and that it has to be done at least 24 hours or more than 24 hours before the procedure. And so what this does, in places like Texas, where you have a lot of violence against abortion providers and you have kind of a few providers who travel from day to day to serve different clinics, it seriously interferes with their ability to serve their patients because they're not usually in the same place for 2 or 3 days at a time. You know, and it also kind of course, increases both the cost and the inconvenience for a woman who has to make several visits. So there's no question, I think, that this is about reducing a woman's ability to access an abortion as opposed to kind of, quote-unquote, increasing her right to know.
Well, even picking up on this bill that's been introduced in Pennsylvania, and I'll go back to you, Michelle, this notion of informed consent, and I think we're all in favor of informed consent, but is there any evidence that with more information, a woman chooses not to have an abortion? Michelle? Did we lose Michelle? Let's see if we can get her back. Melinda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you want to take that?
But no, there actually is, you know, what...
We're losing her. Let's see if we can establish a better line. Do you want to take that, Melinda? And I apologize for some of these technical problems. Go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of people who are against abortion, who are anti-abortion, who are anti-abortion rights, I should say, because we're all anti-abortion in one way or another, do sincerely believe that forcing this information on women can change hearts and minds. I don't see that borne out in anything I've ever seen on it. I would say that to me, the way to go would be changing the conversation rather than changing the law or forcing women, especially in such a humiliating way. I think that minds will be changed, but not in the way that some of these activists hope.
Michelle, you want to weigh in on that, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Oh, I just said that there are a couple of ongoing studies right now which have shown that no, this doesn't dissuade women from having abortions. Although, to be honest, even if it did. That still strikes me as, obviously, if just having the information makes women change their mind, they should change their mind, you know, and women who kind of didn't realize or who, you know, kind of develop an emotional attachment to their fetus should be encouraged to keep their pregnancy and given all the support that they need to do so. But what I think is so insulting here is this assumption, not borne out by any evidence, that women don't really understand what an abortion entails, or they don't understand what it means to be pregnant, and that kind of when they realize that there actually is an embryo or a fetus, it's going to somehow dawn on them that they shouldn't be doing this. I think that, you know, most women who have abortions in this country are already mothers.
Right,
you know,
right.
So they know very well what being pregnant means.
Let me get Taryn from South Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Taryn, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Obviously, this has been a hot topic of conversation between myself and many of my female friends. We're all in our late 30s, early 40s. Most of us are mothers, so it's a conversation that strikes pretty close to the heart. And I think whether or not you're personally pro-choice or pro-life, I have to agree with your speakers and say that I think everybody is fairly anti-abortion. It's obviously a last resort for a lot of women after much thought and many emotions. What I find interesting is, you know, I was obviously raised by a woman who grew up in the feminist era and was raised to be very independent and think for myself. And I find it fairly interesting that we seem to be, as a country, reverting back towards a general blatant abuse of women's rights versus upholding men's rights without infringement. And one of the topics of conversation that we brought up was, is there an alternative to an abortion that would infringe upon men's rights a little bit and kind of make them think a little bit more about the global picture? And one of the topics we talked about was similar to men who are convicted of sexual assaults was a medically induced castration, i.e. a birth control pill for men. Would they be more akin to doing something like that, or would they throw up their arms? And as you can imagine, we discussed it with husbands and boyfriends, and most of them were very against it. So my question is, why do you think, as a culture, especially in post-feminism America, that we are so secure in upholding men's rights, but not as secure in upholding women's, when women are really the people who are going to further the generations down the line?
Well, Taryn, let me see what, I'll start with Melinda Hindenberger, and Melinda, you want to weigh in on that, and we'll get you in Michelle Goldberg as well.
I wish I knew. I mean, you see in women hating in media and in life every day. I mean, you know, yesterday I saw all these mean characterizations of Lindsay Lohan on Saturday Night Live. It's not enough to say she did a poor job. You have to say how horrible she looked. I mean, it's just pervasive, and I have never understood it.
Michelle, our caller talked about post-feminism. Are we there?
Well, no, and I think that part of the problem is the assumption on part of many that we're there. You know, I think you hear a lot of the same arguments from conservatives that you hear about civil rights, which is that they no longer will usually completely disdain the movement. Instead, they'll say that it was a worthy movement that has accomplished everything that it's about to accomplish, and so there's no more need for any sort of activism, that women kind of have all of the rights that men have, and that we can now just kind of leave it to the marketplace to sort the rest out. You know, I absolutely agree with Melinda about a kind of broader explosion of misogyny that kind of goes beyond the political realm and is really part of the cultural realm as well. And without getting kind of too global about all this, I think it's that, you know, the kind of breakdown of gender hierarchies and the kind of breakdown of definite roles for men and women is one of the kind of clearest signs of modernity. And people who hate modernity and kind of hate all of the chaos that the changing world brings sees putting women back in their place as one of the kind of easiest ways to restore a lost order that they yearn for and that they're never going to get back.
But are you saying, do you see preventing a woman from having an abortion is punishing her for sex?
I think in general it's about kind of getting women's reproductive autonomy back, or taking away women's reproductive autonomy and getting it back under male control. You know, one of the things that I think is fascinating all over the world is that in countries where abortion isn't really about women's rights, where it's more about the rights of couples or of men to plan their families, you almost never see an anti-abortion movement, no matter how conservative the country is. You know, there's a reason why it's pretty easy to get an abortion in Iran. And it's partly because, it's not because the Iranians are more liberal than us, it's because it's seen in certain ways as the rights of kind of men and societies to plan their families. It's only when abortion is tied to women's rights that it becomes a major object of social contention.
Let me get, looks like Roseanne from Delaware County to join our conversation. And Roseanne, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for the show.
You're
and
welcome.
Melinda, thank you for saying that the church once had an open door, but do more reporting on that. Here's my thing. I am a Catholic. I am 60. I have a 20-year-old daughter. When I was pregnant, it was my first time pregnancy. I got married late in life. We did have an ultrasound. It had a genetic anomaly that was really, really frightening. And I remember the day I got the bad news. I didn't know which way was playing God, the determination to have the child, etc. But we have our daughter, and she's lovely. But I said to my husband this morning, I can't imagine being that young woman in a clinic with a wand, with a screen, and what I came out of my mouth surprised me. I said, I think I'd want to take the wand and hit the doctor.
Hmm.
And my husband said, I've been thinking the same thing. We lived through a trauma.
Sure.
We're good Catholics. But the lack of empathy for the difficulty just blows my mind.
Well, Roseanne, I appreciate you calling in, and let me give Melinda a chance to weigh in on that. Melinda, go ahead.
I'm really sorry that you've had this challenging situation.
Indeed.
And it's you know, amazingly brave, the families who decide to say yes and who are really, you know, blessed as a result. Many, many feel that way. I agree on the lack of empathy, and the only other thing I would add is that, you know, I think it goes beyond what Michelle was saying about, you know, the misogyny on the right caused by, you know, triggered by people who have problems with modernity. I think that You also, unfortunately, see plenty of misogyny on the left. We like to think that it can be, you know, black and white, white hats and black hats, but it isn't. I think that if we're honest, we see it on the left as well.
Oh, wait, can I just agree with, can I just chime in to agree
sure
with
can.
That wholeheartedly?
Sure.
I mean, certainly I don't think that it's only people on the right who would like to kind of have women's sexuality be under male control. And, you know, I think there's no disagreement between us about the kind of degree of misogyny on the left, particularly just kind of cultural misogyny. I guess the difference is that you see a lot fewer legislative proposals on the left to radically restrict women's rights in response to that misogyny.
And actually, I'm looking at a piece by Kirsten Powers in the Daily Beast where she talks, and the headline is, Rush Limbaugh isn't the only media misogynist. And she goes on to mention Chris Matthews, Keith
right,
Olbermann.
But that was, I think, a ridiculous piece, because although there are other misogynists in the media, the type and degree of attack by Rush Limbaugh on this young woman was really unprecedented and was not really comparable to male politicians or to male pundits saying nasty things about female politicians.
Because she's a private citizen.
Yeah, I mean, that was what was so astonishing. To go after a private citizen for 3 days in the most personal and degrading of terms to ensure that, you know, many of your kind of acolytes are also going to be bombarding her with the most hideous kind of vitriol. It wasn't just about him kind of demeaning a celebrity or demeaning a female politician. It was about sending a message to private citizens and to women all across the country that you're going to be smacked down if you dare speak out about issues of reproductive health.
And I got to jump in here because we're out of time. My thanks to you, Michelle Goldberg, for joining us today in Radio Times, and Melinda Hindenburg as well. Thank you very much. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoyne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.